A government watchdog group says the FBI has access to 640 million photographs that can be scanned with facial recognition software. Those images include things coming from driver's licenses, passports, and mugshots. Meanwhile, the Transportation Security Administration is testing out facial recognition technology at airports in New York City, Atlanta, and Los Angeles. There are even facial recognition security systems at schools in some communities. While law enforcement insists that the technology is crucial for public safety, people are getting worried about their privacy. San Francisco recently became the first major U.S. city to ban facial recognition by police and other agencies. Similar bans are being considered in Oakland and a Boston suburb. Clara Garvey is a senior associate with Georgetown University Law School's Center on Privacy and Technology. She focuses on the use of facial recognition by law enforcement and the ways activists, public defenders, and policymakers can ensure the technology is under control. Clara, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
How widespread is the use of facial recognition technology out there right now?
Face recognition is used by police in an incredibly widespread fashion. We estimate that over half of all American adults are in a face recognition database accessible to law enforcement due to getting a driver's license. We also estimate conservatively that at least a quarter of all law enforcement agencies across the United States have access to a face recognition system.
And what kind of things do we know that they're using it for?
Face recognition is predominantly used for investigations. When law enforcement have a photo or a video of somebody of interest, a suspect, a witness, a victim perhaps, they can take that photo and run it against a database of known individuals, a mugshot database, but as I mentioned, increasingly driver's license databases to try to identify that person. But face recognition can also be used in a surveillance capacity. And there is interest in a lot of law enforcement agencies to deploy face recognition on the back end of live security cameras to be able to essentially identify anybody walking by the camera.
Is that something that's being done now, or is that something that's still in the works, that last thing you mentioned about the surveillance use?
There is a fundamental lack of transparency around how police use this technology, but as far as we're aware, this is something that's still in the works. There are a number of pilot programs that are happening around the country in Orlando, in Washington, D.C., and in New York. And then in addition, a handful of agencies have purchased the capability, but it's unclear whether or not that's actually been deployed. We see this in Detroit and Chicago, for example.
How effective is facial recognition technology? How often does it actually get the face right?
Face recognition does make mistakes. It's considered an imperfect biometric. And as a consequence, law enforcement agencies do generally consider it an investigative lead rather than a positive identification. But unfortunately, what we're seeing is that what that means is far from clear, both to the public and to law enforcement officials as well. And people are being arrested almost solely on the basis of a face recognition match, despite the fact that it does run the risk of making mistakes.
Clara Garvey is with us from Georgetown University Law School's Center on Privacy and Technology. We're talking about the use of facial recognition technology, especially by law enforcement agencies. Claire, people might hear about this and think, well, it sounds like a handy tool for police officers, nothing to worry about if you're not doing anything wrong. What are some of the concerns that privacy and civil rights advocates are raising?
Face recognition can undoubtedly be used as a tool for public safety. It can be used to find the bad guys. However, in the absence of any legislation or regulation around how it's used, it also runs the risk of violating our First Amendment rights, Fourth Amendment rights, and our 14th Amendment rights, our rights to due process and to equal protection. So imagine someone's at a public protest. They know that law enforcement may be taking photography. A law enforcement officer certainly can't walk through that protest demanding that everybody show their ID. That would feel incredibly invasive. What face recognition enables is for police departments to be able to do that remotely, to use the cameras and videos to scan the crowds of or the faces in the crowd and attempt to identify people at that protest. That might cause people to stop attending protests or demonstrations, especially when they think that is a particularly contentious issue, like a pro-life rally or a Second Amendment demonstration, that type of thing. In addition, face recognition, when used as an investigative tool, it might make mistakes. It might put the wrong person on trial. And this information isn't being turned over to defendants. This information would be required under our right to a fair trial to be turned over to defendants, and we're not seeing that happen yet.
So we've seen San Francisco saying, hey, we're going to ban this for police and other agencies. Also, Massachusetts state lawmakers are considering a moratorium on facial recognition surveillance systems. A bill in Congress would look at private companies' collection of facial photos. What are you seeing in terms of regulation of facial recognition technology?
We are seeing an interest across states and at the federal government in bringing the use of face recognition under control. And I think that's a very, very positive thing. I fundamentally believe that it should be up to communities to decide through their legislators whether this is a tool that they want to be used in their communities or whether the risks outweigh the benefits. San Francisco had that discussion, and they decided that as it stands now, the risks of this technology outweigh the potential public safety benefits. There is a phenomenal amount of interest at the federal level as well in regulating this. And what we see is that this is actually a very bipartisan issue. Legislators on both sides of the aisle are interested in adequately safeguarding our rights to privacy, our rights to free speech, even when contemplating that this tool may be a benefit to public safety in some instances.
What about data security for these images? We have a story out there in the news now of at least one customs border enforcement checkpoint where this facial data of people crossing the border apparently was compromised and is in someone's hands. It's not entirely clear whose.
As with any repository of data, the larger that becomes and the more sensitive that information, the more attractive to hackers it becomes as well. So law enforcement agencies and whoever else is seeking to deploy this technology must be very careful that the information is adequately protected against potential malicious attack.
We're talking about the pros and cons of facial recognition software with Claire Garvey. She's a senior associate with Georgetown University Law School's Center on Privacy and Technology. You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. Do you support the use of this technology by police departments and others, or does it give you the creeps? What kind of regulations do you think would need to be in place? Do you trust law enforcement and other agencies to use facial recognition technology appropriately? Call 800-642-1234, or if you have a question for our guest, call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the use and potential misuse of facial recognition technology. Claire Garvey is our guest, senior associate with Georgetown University Law School's Center on Privacy and Technology. You can join in with your questions or your thoughts at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about facial recognition technology? Do you feel okay with, hey, maybe from your passport, your driver's license, whatever, a mugshot, that your face is in federal hands and could be used with this software? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Brandy on Facebook who says, I like it and hate it. It's nice if I go missing and my steps can be retraced, but it stinks knowing I can be followed. Claire, do you hear a lot of that kind of ambivalent opinion about facial recognition?
I do, yes. And I have some of those same opinions. I do think it can be a very valuable tool when we think about missing children, for example. And yet, then the idea of it being used to track our movements across time, figure out where we've been, is also deeply disturbing. And that's why I believe there are ways we can draw rules around the positive uses and allow those uses while constraining any risks that the technology pose to our privacy and other civil liberties.
Claire, I know your work focuses on law enforcement in particular. There is a lot of talk about private companies maybe using this. Examples maybe in the works. If you're at a grocery store, your face might be recognized, or at least your age and demographics estimated, and then up on a screen on the refrigerator will pop up a coupon or ad targeted just for you. What kind of things are you watching for in the private sector?
Sure. One of the angles that is of interest in the private sector is using face recognition by retail stores to determine whether or not there's somebody in their store who's suspected of shoplifting. Now imagine for a moment you are going into a grocery store and you get stopped by somebody who works there and told you are not welcome there. And the reason behind that is because you're misidentified by a face recognition system as a shoplifter. What is your avenue for recourse? Do you have the ability to demand to know why you were kicked out of the store? Do you have the right to look through and make sure that your photo is not on some list that it shouldn't be on? These are some of the questions that are raised both in the commercial space when face recognition is used, as well as in the law enforcement space.
And I've seen out there concerns that those wrong identifications with the state of the technology now more likely to happen with people of color and I think with women. Is that the case you've seen?
That's right. Studies continue to show that the face recognition systems that are out there tend to perform differently depending on the demographics, what the person looks like that they're searching for. These systems seem to have a much harder time distinguishing between women and then people with darker skin, as well as young people.
We're talking about facial recognition technology with Claire Garvey from Georgetown University Law School Center on Privacy and Technology. Now, the worst case, people point toward China stepping up their facial recognition program with 200 million surveillance cameras, in part keeping a close eye on Uyghurs, a large Muslim minority group. What do you see in that kind of worst case scenario?
What China shows us is where the technology could go, the capability that it allows authorities, and what sort of it makes possible. I hope we take a very hard look at what's happening in China and Russia and elsewhere, and I hope our legislators and we as the voting public decide that this is not the future that we want in this society, and we place rules around this and other more advanced technologies to make sure that our rights are protected.
Is this issue, you think, flying under the radar for a lot of local and state governments?
I think it is. We were surprised at how common face recognition was. We were not expecting to find a quarter of all law enforcement agencies across the country having access to one of these systems. I think most people, if you ask them, in the 32 states that allow police to search or to request searches of their DMV database, I think most people would be surprised that their DMV photo is being used in this way. So there very much is still a lack of transparency around this issue. That is meaning that the public and legislators aren't the ones deciding whether or not they want this technology used and what rules should be put in place.
Are there concerns about individual consent, whether we know that we're agreeing to use our images to have our images used in this way if we get a driver's license, go to a public place, however these images are collected?
I think it is a question of consent. Americans have historically rejected the idea of a national biometric identification system, feeling that that is too much control or too much a power in the hands of the federal government. What we're seeing is that through information sharing and through the access of the FBI in particular to DMV databases, what essentially is happening is a de facto national biometric ID system, but one that we didn't vote for, one that we didn't agree to.
What would you say to, say, local government leaders who are listening right now or state policymakers about what kind of conversations you'd like to see them having when it comes to facial recognition technology?
I would encourage them to take a look at whether the executive agencies, whether police departments in their communities are using this technology, whether their Department of Transportation or DMV is sharing information with the federal government, and to make sure that that is in line with what the public who voted them into office, whether that's in line with what they want.
As we wrap up, Claire, are we seeing this technology, this facial recognition technology, advance in its capabilities and what it can do?
Yes, face recognition is becoming more accurate, and it is becoming better. 2 years ago, companies would say they could run face surveillance, real-time face recognition, on a couple thousand photos. Last year, they said they can do it on upwards of a billion photos. So as the limitations, technological limitations, are eliminated from this space, we are going to see more and more aggressive deployments and more risky deployments of this technology that really pose more serious risks to our privacy and our civil liberties.
Claire, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
That's Claire Garvey, Senior Associate with Georgetown University Law School's Center on Privacy and Technology. We talked to her about facial recognition technology. A government watchdog group recently said that the FBI has access to 640 million photographs that can be searched using facial recognition software. The agency says it only uses facial recognition tools during criminal investigations and considers them crucial to law enforcement's ability to protect public safety. Privacy advocates say they're concerned about a lack of regulation. Still time for you to let us know what you think about facial recognition technology over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Do you see upside? Do you have concerns about our privacy, about how it's used, about the potential for misuse? And have you worked with it with yourself as a programmer in law enforcement, in retail? Let us know about your experience on the Ideas Network Facebook page. The Wausau YMCA hopes the addition of a new senior center will help its members expand their definition of wellness. The center will add social and educational gatherings for older adult members. As Wisconsin's population ages, it could be a sign of things to come. Rob Mentzer reports.
The 8 a.m. silver sneakers class at the Woodson YMCA is getting a workout. It's a class designed for seniors, and it's only open to those who are Medicare eligible. For 45 minutes, 30 or so men and women do aerobics on the gym floor, sometimes using chairs next to them for balance. Then, when it's time for the class to cool down and relax, this happens. That's the sound of a massive construction project that's going on just outside the gym. It's part of a $21 million expansion of the downtown Wausau facility. And a big part of that expansion is the creation of a new senior center.
I just saw the cement truck was here pouring something earlier this morning.
Construction crews are hard at work as Brian Bailey gives a tour of the center, which will be called The Landing. He's the YMCA's executive director.
This is technically the new entrance. This is where you'll come in right through here.
Bailey says the Y has programs for all ages, but older adults are its fastest growing group.
We've seen the trend, as I said, in the last 2 years, our 55 and older population is really starting to grow by leaps and bounds.
That's why they're building a place just for those members. Besides exercise equipment, it will offer seniors social events, field trips, card games, book clubs, and a technology center. The YMCA is a private nonprofit, and the expansion, including the senior center, is funded entirely by local donors and foundations. But it addresses a public problem, and one that's not limited to Wausau. Wisconsin's population is getting older, and that's especially true outside its large urban centers. According to state projections, the population of those 55 and older will grow from about 1.5 million people in 2010 to nearly 2.3 million in 2040. They'll be more than one-third of the state's population. In some Northwoods counties, more than half. The aging population could mean far-reaching changes to Wisconsin's economy and its politics. It also presents some real health challenges. Dr. Amy Kind is a physician and PhD researcher in geriatrics with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She studies the way people's environment affects their well-being. She says she loves to see organizations investing in infrastructure that can bring people together.
Staying physically active, staying socially active, and staying cognitively active are absolutely fundamentally important.
At Wausau's YMCA, they created a new position 3 years ago to help foster those connections.
My name is Becky Zalent, and I am the current active older adults director at the Woodson YMCA.
Zalent is 62. She has six kids and is a former high school French teacher.
I have earned this hair color. That's what I can say.
She said she's seen how senior members value getting involved in programs that offer social support.
I heard a new member talking to an even newer member saying, oh, you should go to this class. They're so nice. You know, it's a good workout. And they are helping spread that news.
And for Bailey, that sense of belonging is a big part of the point.
So it gives someone an opportunity to just have a place to say, this is my place. I belong to it. You know, this is where I'm going. This is where I know on a daily basis. I'm going to go have my cup of coffee. I'm going to find out who's doing what and catching up. And people need that.
For a lot of Wisconsinites, aging looks different today than it did a generation ago. Part of that is due to medical advances, but part of it is a growing appreciation that social connections matter to our health, no matter how old we are. Rob Menser, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, we'll find out why many rural areas are losing their local radio stations and what it means for communities when that happens. A lot of women have gotten into organized sports around the United States, but they're not well represented in the world of coaching. Our guest says there's a double standard out there that makes it more difficult for women to get into coaching in the first place and to stay there in the long run. Plus, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. Get ready to fire up your grill and make some pizza. Our guest tells us how to make great summertime pizzas without even turning the oven on. Plus, we'll round up some of the top stories around Wisconsin, talk to the reporters who are covering them. That and more, it's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.